Greetings and welcome to Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle. I'm the pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. And in this episode of Word Magazine, we're going to be looking at the topic, when the majority text is not the majority text, with special attention to a variant that appears in Romans 13 and verse 9. And there are certain persons who advocate for, instead of the traditional Protestant text or even the modern critical text, what is known as the majority text, or sometimes for what is known as the Byzantine text. And obviously, as an advocate for the traditional Protestant text, I don't see the majority text as a viable alternative to the traditional Protestant text. I previously have done a podcast on five questions or five challenges for those who hold to the majority text. I actually have an article that's going to be coming out this summer in the journal Bible League Quarterly related to the majority text. But in this episode, I want to look at one type of challenge to the majority text, and that is, namely, that it doesn't always represent the majority of extant manuscripts. And so there are a few places where the majority text is actually something of a misnomer for at least the published or printed editions of the majority text. And one of those places is Romans 13, 9, a place where the majority text is not the majority text, to refer back to our topic. I also want to give a credit for this episode to one of the viewers who on a previous video had made reference to Romans 13, 9 in the comments. And then that person has also emailed me a couple times. And I told that person I would do a podcast. And so I'm fulfilling that promise today by doing a podcast on this topic. So in order to have the discussion maybe a little bit better, I'm going to see if I can share with you on screen a PowerPoint that I have put together. And let's see if we can share this from the beginning. There we are. And so let's walk through, if we can, this topic of when the majority text is not the majority text, with special reference to Romans 13, 9. And so let's begin by just asking, what is the majority text method? So there are several printed editions of the so-called majority text, and we want to look at, well, what is the method? And to do this, to answer this question, what is the majority text method? I'm not going to put words in the mouth of the advocates for this position. I'm going to let some of their scholars put for us their position, their description of their method, for us to consider. And so let's look at the printed edition that is the Greek New Testament according to the majority text, edited by Zane Hodges and Arthur Farstad. This is the second edition of 1985. And they have a preliminary discussion of what they call a majority text method on pages Roman numeral 11 to 13. And they note two basic premises of the majority text method. First, any reading overwhelmingly attested by the manuscript tradition is more likely to be original than its rival or rivals. And so they're looking for readings that are overwhelmingly attested in the manuscript tradition. The second premise, however, of the majority text method, according to Hodges and Farstad, is final decisions about readings ought to be made on the basis of a reconstruction of their history in the manuscript tradition. That's on page Roman numeral 13 or 12, rather. They go on to say, just because Westcott and Hort applied their reconstruction method poorly, it is not for that reason to be abandoned. And then they add, the majority text method seeks to track the original text in the vast body of surviving manuscripts. And so the point that we want to grasp here is that the so-called majority text method is not necessarily based on the plurality of witnesses the majority, the reading that is found in the majority of extant manuscripts, but it is a reconstruction method. And the editors say, we're going to look for passages that are overwhelmingly attested, but they sort of acknowledge there are going to be places where that isn't going to be able, they aren't going to be able to determine that or determine it with precision. And so they're going to have to use the same types of methods as Westcott and Hort to reconstruct the text. And I've often, in my podcast, Teaching and Writing, have contrasted the modern critical text method and the majority text method, which I've called a reconstruction method, with the Protestant traditional text, which I have suggested is based on a historical preservation method. Let's go ahead and look at another popular version of that could be under the broader umbrella of the majority text method. And this is the Byzantine text form. And here I'm borrowing from the New Testament text in the original Greek, Byzantine text from 2005, as compiled and arranged by Maurice Robinson and William Pierpont. And they likewise, in the preface, describe their method. And they focus on a group of manuscripts that come from a particular era and that reflect the Byzantine period of Christianity. And they write on page Roman numeral 5, the Byzantine text form preserves with general consistency the type of New Testament text that dominated the Greek-speaking world. This dominance existed from at least the 4th century until the invention of printing in the 16th century. And then later they add on page Roman numeral 8, or Roman numeral pages Roman numeral 7 and 8, the Byzantine priority method functions within accepted text critical guidelines, utilizing all pertinent transmissional, transcriptional, external, and internal considerations when evaluating variant readings. The emphasis is upon what they call reasoned transmissionalism. So, again, they are not necessarily looking for what is the predominant reading or majority reading in the Byzantine manuscripts, but they're going to apply a form of textual criticism, again, what they call reasoned transmissionalism, to evaluate variants. And so this is also a reconstruction method like that of Hodges and Farstad. And both of them were drawing upon the work of von Soden. So this position is, again, representing a reconstruction method. So just to make things clear, once again, let me offer this observation. The majority text method and the Byzantine priority method are not, in fact, based simply on determining the readings supported by the majority of extant manuscripts. They're both reconstruction methods. So they're not saying that the scriptures have been historically preserved, kept pure in all ages, in the way that the Westminster Confession of Faith and the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith put it in chapter 1 and paragraph 8, but that modern scholars can take the corrupted transmissional stream and they can examine it and they can correct it by reconstructing what they think is the proper text of the New Testament. And they say that this generally is found in the majority of currently extant manuscripts. So let's look at a place where they don't believe that the majority text actually represents the true text. And this is found in Romans 13:9. And so just for us to get a little bit of an idea of what is in play here, let me just read for you Romans 13:9 as it stands in the Authorized Version, which is based on the Textus Receptus, the received text. It reads, "For this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." And of course, if you're familiar with Paul's teaching in Romans 13, He is affirming the teaching of Christ, love your neighbor as yourself, from Leviticus 19:18. And he is saying that to do that, and I think in part of this too is also a reference, a remembrance of the so-called great commandment teaching of Christ, love God with your heart, mind, soul, and strength, love your neighbor as yourself. If one does this, he is keeping the moral law, and so all the second table, the moral law, is comprehended in the teaching, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And so there's the listing of various elements taken from Exodus 20 of the Ten Commandments. Now, interestingly, if you're looking at this, it's not in the order exactly as in Exodus 20. The sixth commandment and the seventh commandment are switched, because Paul is probably writing this, of course, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, but he's not seeking a total textual precision here as far as the chronological ordering. But he says, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt, seventh commandment, thou shalt not kill, sixth commandment, thou shalt not steal, eighth commandment, thou shalt not bear false witness, ninth commandment, thou shalt not covet, tenth commandment. And if there be any other commandment, all the moral law, the second table of the moral law, man's duty to his fellow man is comprehended in the saying from Leviticus 19:18, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And you can see here that I've put in bold, thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not bear false witness, because this is where there's going to be a textual variant that is going to be at the source of this, the difficulty with this verse. And then, and secondly here, I've put it here as it appears in Scribner's TR of 1880. And you can see that he's got the negative particle u, and he's got the verb for you shall not steal, or you shall steal, and it's the negative particle, you shall not steal. And then the verb for bear false witness, and it's got the negative particle in front of it, you shall not bear false witness. And so the issue is with these two words, and there's going to be a variant where the second part, you shall not bear false witness, is omitted in some manuscripts. And so that's the way it appears in Westcott and Hort. Look at the very last section here on this slide in Romans 13:9, Westcott and Hort's Greek New Testament of 1881. You see they have the u kleptis, you shall not steal, but they don't have the u pseudo martyreis, you shall not bear false witness. So that is missing. And then you see in a modern translation that's based on the modern critical text, it says you shall not steal, but then it jumps to you shall not covet, and it omits thou shalt not bear false witness. And so this is the textual issue with Romans 13:9. So let's go ahead and let's look next at how this verse appears in the state-of-the-art modern critical text. This is in the Nesselon 28th edition that came out in 2012. And you'll notice that in the modern critical text, it follows in the same tradition as Westcott and Hort. It's got the you shall not, thou shalt not steal, but then it jumps to you shall not covet. And there's a little mark there saying that there's an addition. When you go down to the apparatus, there's the addition mark, and then it gives you the part that is omitted, you shall not bear false witness, and it gives you the evidence for the inclusion of thou shalt not bear false witness. It begins by giving you the fact that there's an alternate spelling of it that has an ending with eta sigma rather than epsilon iota sigma that's found in one manuscript, P. And then it says that the reading that includes you shall not bear false witness is found in Codex Sinaiticus. So one of the favorites of modern textual critics is a witness in favor of the traditional text reading. There's P, we've already mentioned, which has an alternative spelling, mentions a couple of other manuscripts like 048, then some minuscules, 81, 104, 365, with some variation, 1505, 1506. And then there's a note, PM. PM, it doesn't mean post-meridian here in the Nestle-Aland apparatus. If you look at the front matter, the introduction to the Nestle-Aland, it tells you that PM means stands for the Latin phrase per multi, which means very many. And the editors explain that they use PM when the witness of the majority text is divided in fairly equal strength between two or rarely three variant readings. The abbreviation PM appears then with both majority text readings. So what they're saying is that there are places where it's you can't determine what the majority text is, and they're saying this is one of those places. So there are very many manuscripts that support the inclusion of thou shalt not bear false witness, and also versions like these old Latin manuscripts, AR, B, the Clementine Vulgate, with some variation in the Heraclean Syriac and the Boharic. And the alternative textual variant is to not include thou shalt not bear false witness. And this is the text as it is in the Nestle-Aland 28th edition. And they give you some evidence for that. Papyrus 46 doesn't have thou shalt not bear false witness. Alexandrinus doesn't have it. Vaticanus, Bezae, FGL, Zai, and then it lists a number of minuscules. And then there's the PM, the per multi. Many extant manuscripts, it says, don't have thou shalt not bear false witness. And then they also list a couple of versions, the Stuttgart Vulgate, the Peshitta Syriac, the Sahidic, with some variation, one of the church fathers, Clement of Alexandria, and Ambrosiaster. So anyways, this is a place, Romans 13:9, where they don't give us the numbers, but they say there's not a distinctive majority text reading here. There are many manuscripts that include thou shalt not bear false witness in this list, and there are a number of manuscripts that don't include it in this list. I looked up Metzger's textual commentary, and he gives the modern critical text with the omission of thou shalt not bear false witness, a B reading. And he says, under the influence of Exodus 20, 15 through 17 and Deuteronomy 5, 19 through 21, the places where you find the listing of the Ten Commandments in the Old Testament, he says several witnesses, and he mentions Sinaiticus and P and so forth, insert, you shall not bear false witness. In the course of transmission, other readings arose in various witnesses through omission, perhaps because of homoteleion or rearrangements of the order of the commandments. The chief manuscripts of the Septuagint vary among themselves and from the Hebrew. So he says it's a mix-up related to trying to harmonize this with the traditional reading of the Ten Commandments. And he also says that perhaps it fell out because of homoteleion, that you've got the series of statements that all begin with this negative particle ooh, and the scribe could have skipped from one to the other and could have omitted thou shalt not bear false witness. So that's the way it is in the Nestle-Aland edition. Now let's look at the printed editions of the majority text or the Byzantine text. And let's begin by looking at the Hodges and Farstad second edition of 1985. And you'll see that they have the you shall not steal, but they leave out you shall not bear false witness. In the note at the bottom, they have an M that's not in Gothic. If it's in Gothic, it says it's the vast majority. Here, they have an M and a little superscript with a PT in part. They say part of the majority text just ends it here at you shall not steal. And they mention P46B, which is Vaticanus and Alexandrinus. But then they say some add you shall not bear false witness. And they've got to get an M with a PT. And so a number of so-called majority text manuscripts don't have or include you shall not bear false witness. They mention Sinaiticus, and then they simply put the TR. So the Hodges and Farstad majority text says there is no majority here. We're going to go with the same conclusion that was reached by the modern critical text. We're going to include thou shalt not steal, but we're going to omit thou shalt not bear false witness. Similarly, if we look at the Robinson and Pierpont Greek New Testament in the Byzantine text from 2005, you can see they did the same thing. They had the you shall not steal, but they omit the you shall not bear false witness. But over here in the margin, they have given it as sort of an alternate reading. You shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness. And in their apparatus, they don't deal with listing variants in the way that the Nesselland or the Farstad-Hodges majority text do. So anyways, these two major published editions of the majority text or the Byzantine text omit you shall not bear false witness, saying we don't believe that is original. And they say the majority text here is divided. It's unclear at this point. Let's look at one more printed edition, we could say, in the majority text tradition. And this is the volume that was put together by Wilbur Pickering. And the second edition of this, it's called the Greek New Testament According to Family 35. So he gave special attention to one group of minuscule manuscripts that are similar to one another called Family 35. And this, again, is the second edition publishing of this in 2015. And you'll notice that, interestingly enough, Pickering not only includes thou shalt not steal, but he also includes in the text proper, you shall not or thou shalt not bear false witness. So he has restored the traditional reading to his text. And here's what's really interesting. If you look down here at the footnote, he's got the variant, you shall not bear false witness. And he notes that it's in Family 35. And he notes that it appears in 67% of extant manuscripts. Well, I think by any other standard, we would say that 67% would be a majority. I don't know what the threshold was for Hodges and Farstad or for Maurice Robinson in determining what the majority is. One might think if you just use, I guess, the most simplistic terms that 51% would be a majority. But he says 67% of extant manuscripts include the thou shalt not bear false witness. And you'll see he's given the alternate here. He mentions that P46 and Alexandrinus and Vaticanus omit the thou shalt not bear false witness. But he says this appears in only 33% of extant manuscripts. So 67% of extant manuscripts have thou shalt not bear false witness, whereas only 33% do not have it. And so with respect to Hodges and Farstad and Maurice Robinson and Pierpont's printed editions. It's a majority text. We're at Romans 13:9. The reading is not the majority text. And so the subject for this podcast, when the majority text is not the majority text. So here are some conclusions that we can draw from this little episode. The majority text and the Byzantine priority text are the result of a reconstruction method and do not necessarily reflect the reading found in the majority. And there I just put it in a lowercase level letter. It does not necessarily reflect the reading found in the majority of extant manuscripts, since textual critics do not hold that the majority text can always be definitively determined. This is true not only in the book of Revelation, where there aren't a huge number of manuscripts, and so it's a persistent problem in the book of Revelation, but it's also a problem in other passages in the New Testament, like at Romans 13:9. In the case of Romans 13:9, according to Pickering, the TR text, which includes the phrase, "Thou shalt not bear false witness," is found in 67% of extant manuscripts, including the Uncial Sinaiticus, which is otherwise highly favored by modern textual critics. But this is not the reading that is found in Hodges and Farstad, nor is it the reading found in Robinson and Pierpont's Byzantine platform text. And so essentially, this majority text edition and this Byzantine platform edition actually agree with the modern critical text in choosing a minority reading rather than a majority reading. This will not surprise you. I don't think there is any compelling reason to abandon the TR reading of Romans 13:9. And I think there are strong reasons to affirm it. In this case, it is the majority text. It is the text that is favored by the majority of extant manuscripts. Now, I don't think that's always the best test for what the proper text of the New Testament is. I don't think that God has preserved his word by giving us a body of extant manuscripts that we then have to sift through in order to determine what the original text is. I would hold to the historical providential preservation of the text. And so I want to affirm what was affirmed at the time of the Protestant Reformation. But here's a place where even those who hold to the so-called majority text are unable to determine what they believe that majority text is. So with that, we're going to bring this episode to a close. I hope this has been helpful and edifying for those who are listening, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next issue of Word Magazine. Till then, take care and God bless.